Welcome to the Let's Talk EMDR podcast, brought to you by the EMDR International Association, or EMDRIA. I am your host, Kim Howard. In this episode, we are talking with EMDR certified therapist, trainer, and consultant, Carol Miles, about EMDR therapy and panic attacks. Let's get started. Today, we are speaking with EMDR certified therapist, consultant, and trainer, Carol Miles, to discuss EMDR therapy and panic attacks. Thank you, Carol, for being here today. We are so happy that you said yes.
Oh, Kim, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm delighted.
Carol, can you tell us about your path to becoming an EMDR therapist?
Well, as much of my path has been, it was not really a very strategic process. It was mostly a matter, I think, of really good luck. I've had very fortunate situations happen to me over the years. This one came because of my involvement with a younger colleague. I was her graduate school intern instructor, and then later her mentor, I guess, and friend. And so over the years, we would have conversations. So Hurricane Katrina came and went, thank goodness. And we were all having our own struggles at that point. And she suggested we should get trained in EMDR. And I said, absolutely not. I don't want to sit around like a monkey waving my arm. I've had a lot of other training, so I don't need to do that. I had a little bit of an attitude problem, but she encouraged me, as a younger person might, with an older person, to go look it up. So I went on and studied it a bit and thought, okay, maybe. And I wrote to Bob Gelbach at the Humanitarian Assistance Program, who was the head of that at that time. And I said, you know, you guys have been doing free trainings over here since Katrina. It's been a year and a half. Would you be interested in doing another one? And he said, oh, no, we're finished. But I had a Tulane.edu account, which meant I was an adjunct professor in the School of Social Work. And his wife, his late wife now, Kathy Davis, had graduated from Tulane in the School of Social Work. And so he was intrigued by the opportunity to come to Tulane. So I did logistics for them, and they came to New Orleans again after they had finished doing their free trainings. And so I got a free training. And in that very first meeting, in this really beautiful, old, but has a lot of aches and pains building that we were in, that Tulane offered, crammed in a lot of people and not your most perfect training, I'll say now as a trainer, from the standpoint of the space. And we did this training, and I was totally wowed from the beginning in the practicum, and then continued on my process over the years. But that was how I became an EMDR therapist, kind of fell into it. And I really do want to credit my younger colleagues for, not only do they get mentoring from us old folks, but they also help us stay abreast of new things and stay involved in new things. And I really appreciate that involvement. It's a two-way street when you work with folks.
Yeah, that's a great origin story. And you're not the first podcast guest we've had who was a little skeptical of the therapy or wasn't exactly interested in the beginning. And so sort of had to be convinced by other colleagues. So we always like to know where people are coming from and how they got here. So thanks for sharing that. Carol, what's your favorite part of working with EMDR therapy?
Seeing people get well. Certainly watching people grow and heal is what I got into this profession for, and what I love to see with EMDR. It's probably the most exciting thing that can happen in work, is to see folks who come in with such pain grow and change. And I've worked with some folks where it took a lot of time and pacing in order to get them where they needed to go, and other folks where it's so immediate, it's just unbelievable. I'll walk out of those sessions just thinking, how did that happen? This is amazing to watch people's brains heal themselves.
Yeah. That's a great answer. Thank you. So let's talk about why you're here today. Talk about EMDR therapy and panic attacks. Can you tell the audience what a panic attack is?
Well, I did a little research knowing that I was going to speak on panic attacks. And I found that panic attacks are actually much broader than I had been thinking of them in terms of, but they're defined as recurrent, unexpected fears, anxieties that have a surge of intense discomfort from this extreme fear. And it gets high usually within minutes. Sometimes it lasts as much as 5 minutes. Sometimes it lasts sort of cycling up and down for a much longer period of time. And I started thinking about all the different types of panic attacks. And in my mind, it became a continuum all the way from my answer to the question, Carol, will you come on the podcast and talk about panic? When I said, okay, I'm panicking now, which is just, you know, common language, how we talk about getting a little anxious or nervous or worried about stuff, all the way up to the idea of much more extreme panic attacks. So I kind of developed this idea of a continuum, kind of from pre-panic, which is like, I'm really worried about it. Oh no, what's going to happen? Anxiety, we're afraid, we're dreading things, we're stressed. Up then to an actual panic attack, which is generally short-lived, very extreme, often having had a real danger occur, sometimes coming up with no real danger. It just sort of out of the blue kind of hits us. And we have this fight, flight, freeze response. We have physical symptoms that often mimic heart attacks. One of the most common problems for folks in the emergency room is folks come in, clients come in with panic attacks, but it looks like a heart attack. So they run all these tests trying to figure out what's going on with them. And they send them home with basically it's all in your head or a worry about what's going on psychologically. And so it may be they kind of know what's been going on that created the panic, or they have no idea. And then they begin worrying about having another panic attack, or they avoid circumstances that might create anxiety. And that's really when the development of a panic disorder occurs, is when one of those two things happens. And then it may add to the problem where people will begin to avoid going out, so that they get so worried about whatever might happen to them, they develop agoraphobia. Panic disorder can be with or without agoraphobia. Then on the far, far end of the continuum are folks who have very lengthy, intense panic attacks. So the other ones were maybe 5 minutes up to an hour. These might last all day long, on and off, kind of cycling up and cycling down a little bit, and then back up again and then down and up again. And those folks tend to be folks who have CPTSD, or that kind of developmental PTSD that occurs when people have a lot of trauma in childhood. And I have a number of those clients anywhere on that continuum at any given time.
It's good that you mentioned it. I have a friend who experienced what he didn't realize at the time was a panic attack about 15 years ago. He went to the emergency room thinking he was having a heart attack. Now, I am not suggesting that people don't seek care if they think they're having a heart attack, or
absolutely
think, oh, it might be panic, I don't need to go see a doctor. But he literally thought he was having a heart attack. And so the symptoms are very similar. And so I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Kim, one of the things that was in your list of questions that maybe we can just go ahead and segue to now is about an interesting case. So, which reminds me of your friend. And this fellow came in, I'm offering now only for new clients. I only see folks for intensives. So we do longer sessions. We do all of it packed into a relatively short period of time, 6 to 9 hours over a week or so. And so this fellow came in and he explained to me that he had had a whole series of panic attacks that were really secondary to a diagnosis of cardiac problems. So he had cardiac problems and panic simultaneously, which was really a kind of a complicated piece to sort out and figure out where to intervene for him. He had been to the ER, I think he said 12 times over the past year, and eventually learned that it was a panic attack and what the signs were, and that he wasn't about to die of a heart attack, although he had a cardiac condition.
Right. So let's talk about the successes you've seen using EMDR therapy for panic attacks.
This gentleman that I was talking about, who was about my age, so mid-60s, I guess that's given me a little extra room there, let's say late 60s. He came in and described this scenario to me. He was really unusual and interesting in that as we began talking about it, his fear very clearly was, I'm going to die. The doctors deemed him extremely healthy with this cardiac condition that he had. He didn't need to have a stent. His lifestyle was great. His exercise routine was great. He was otherwise a very healthy man. He was in a good relationship with his second wife. Things were really good for him. Strong spiritual component to his life at this point. And he said, I said, well, when was the first time you were ever afraid of death? And he said he was a little boy, preschool maybe, or kindergarten, very, very young. He couldn't pinpoint the date, but he remembered really clearly a family member had died and he didn't know anything about death before that. And he was terrified. This is very, very young. So it fit the EMDR model mm-hmm. of going back early and looking at that past target. Although there are a lot of modified protocols that we look at today in working with folks with panic disorder, I chose kind of a traditional model with him to go back and work on that really early time with his mom, which his brain was incredible, listening to him make the generalizations and move through stuff. And he created a whole safe place within his processing that was in addition to his other safe place. And he created this imaginary, actually afraid of himself dying and didn't know what that meant. His mom's answer was that we are going to go to heaven, which didn't satisfy him very much at that age. Mm-hmm. He was pretty much still terrified. And he remembered that really clearly. So we zoomed in on that target with phase three, started there. And then he began doing this work and things just were coming up for him, just the way things do in EMDR. And suddenly there was a cloud with his father standing on it. His father had indeed passed away. He had avoided being terrified of his father's death by exiting stage right, I guess you would say. He had another event he had to go to, so he didn't stay by his father's bed. He had an excuse to go somewhere else, and he always felt guilty about that. So in the processing, he imagined his father on a cloud, I guess in heaven, waving and smiling at him. And then soon another person appeared on the cloud, was a friend of his who he had died, who I guess he also had avoided any of the triggers about death for. Also smiling and waving, not beckoning, not calling him, but saying that they were happy, they were pleased with him, they were good, and he was good. And so we went on with this processing. He finished the processing, did all of the work. We also did some present triggers, and we did future template. When we completed all of that work in 9 hours total over a number of days, he went on a trip to the beach, which he loved to do, and most of us around here love to do. He went to the beach, and there's a part of my intensive packet you're supposed to send back. He hadn't sent it back yet. It's really curious. So I wrote to him and I said, oh, by the way, just a reminder, there is this component of the packet. Really love for you to send it back. And he wrote back and he said, I am doing great. I'm so happy. I haven't felt anxious at all. And I thought, wow,
that's great.
So cool.
Yeah.
So that was one of my successes. Kind of an unusual route because of that very early memory was so clearly identified by him, so connected to the fears that he was having presently. Some people, it's not like that. It's more complicated. Other folks who don't have panic disorder, who are just having panic, it may be just in the moment we're going to do some resource work to help get them better grounded and calmer. A lot of the work around panic disorder or having panic attacks is around helping people have that ability to self-soothe, to emotionally regulate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I also suspect, I mean, you and I both raised children, you know, when children are young, it's so difficult as adults to explain complicated life events, especially a death. And when they're young, it's, you know, their mind starts to go, well, what if my parents die? Or what if my grandparents die? Or somebody that they're really close to and they love, and then they get worried about those kinds of things. And so I can see how that would happen and how that would sort of manifest over the years to become a huge worry for him. So I'm so glad that he was able to find you and work that out.
Well, what was fascinating about it to me was that he was so worried about those things, but he actually had done this incredible job of avoiding his fear for all those years, you know, 60 plus years, really avoided them beautifully. And then couldn't avoid them anymore when he was faced with his own medical condition.
Right.
And then it was right in his face and he was terrified. And over and over again, having those experiences that mimicked his actual illness. So it was really, it was a great case. I had a lot of fun seeing the results of that case. I wouldn't say it's so much fun when you're in the middle of it because you're, you know, right there in the scenario with the client, but watching the results is the best.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. Carol, are there any specific complexities or challenges with treatment for people with panic attacks?
I do think you really have to identify carefully and clearly whether or not this is somebody who is panicked about something specific in their life and it's related to real circumstances, or is it something from the past that is coming up right here and now? It's generally irrational stuff, but there could be rational things creating panic. You know, if you're in a domestic violence situation or other situations where there is impending danger, you've got to make sure your client really is safe. On the other hand, the majority of the time, in my experience, has been folks who are panicking about things that are not immediate dangers to them. And then they really have to learn some skills of emotional regulation. And sometimes we have to titrate the process, take bite-sized chunks of the feared things. This gentleman didn't have to do that. He dove right in. He was really ready to get rid of these feelings, really ready to do the work on it, and had already learned a number of tools himself for emotional regulation. Sometimes folks who come in who experience panic are at such a hypervigilant level that it's very hard for them to achieve a sense of safety and trust with the therapist. So you have to work hard on that relationship, making sure that there is at least a moment of safety within the relationship with the therapist.
That's good advice. Thank you. Are there any myths that you would like to bust about working with EMDR therapy and panic attacks?
So as I was thinking about the continuum idea, I reached out to a friend of mine who's EMDR trained, but has used it very little. She's really in the VA system in a management position. And I wrote to her and I said, what about this? And she said, yeah, I think that makes sense. That's good. Make sure that you da, da, da. And then she said, and then of course, exposure is what should be used. And I wrote back as the way she's used to me writing back and said, well, you know, EMDR can also be effective for this. So I think that there are a lot of folks who are very well-trained, very thoughtful, smart folks who just don't know about the benefits of using EMDR. And I want to point to a study that was done, I think it's by Horst in, 2017. And it was a comparison study between EMDR and CBT. There aren't very many studies that look at the use of EMDR, but that one showed it was equal to CBT. I think there may be more studies coming up. Certainly in the Netherlands, De Jong and Susie Mathiasen have been doing a tremendous amount of work with very intensive types of treatment processes. They use a combination of exposure, EMDR, and exercise in their treatment modalities. Seems to be extremely effective. Haven't seen their work replicated in outpatient, like private practice settings, or in the US, but they have done a tremendous amount of research on their work in the Netherlands, very impressive. So I'd like to say to the folks who don't know that EMDR can work with panic disorders, go for it, see what happens.
I will post those studies that you mentioned in the description box so that people can directly click on them and go check them out. So thank you. Carol, how do you practice cultural humility as an EMDR therapist?
You know, that was such an interesting question. And I've had to really ponder that for a bit. I think the first piece is really personal reflection. I have made, I can't even tell you how many mistakes in this category over the years. So many times teaching in graduate school or in interpersonal relationships, or even in when I worked on the EMDRIA board, there were times where I made really mistakes. And what I really have to do is reflect on those mistakes. I'm okay with being called out, being talked to about where there's a microaggression or where I've misunderstood something or I need to wake up to more information. And I really like to have that directly given to me so that I can respond well. I try to be open. I try to be teachable. I try to engage in settings where I'm going to learn more about other cultures. I try to be aware of the opportunities for that, and also really look for opportunities to mentor folks who are of different cultures to help to launch them in part in solidarity with EMDRIA's stance on that subject, but also because it's important to me personally.
Good answer. Thank you. Carol, do you have a favorite free EMDR related resource you would suggest either for the public or other EMDR therapists?
Well, you know, I always point to emdria.org as the place to find out things. And one of the new hot things that has just come out is the Emdria Library, which is amazing. And it has some components that are only available to members and some components that are open source that are available to everybody. So that's my new thing. And I love the Emdria videos and the opportunities for folks to see those things. So I use a lot of those pieces to try to help people find out more. And I like to, when I talk to people about EMDR, the public or friends, I try to kind of vet what it is they're going to look at and warn them. When you do the Google search, stuff comes up that doesn't really hold water. It's been disproven a number of times already, and here it is popping up again. So here, try to look at this, which is where emdria.org comes in.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you for the plug. We agree, but we're a little biased. So what would you like people outside of the EMDR community to know about EMDR therapy for panic attacks?
I think it's very important to work with a therapist who's going to look carefully at the diagnostic components and make sure that they're addressing the need of the client, and then go for it. I think standard protocol can be very effective, as it was with this gentleman that I referenced earlier. I think using, in some cases, flash forward, where you are really zooming in on what is the feared thing that's might going to come up in the future. How are you going to address that? So I think go for it. There are a number of different ways to address panic in the client population, and you need to look for the right one.
All right. If you weren't an EMDR therapist, what would you be?
That's probably the hardest question.
There's no wrong answer here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I always wanted to be a blues singer, but I didn't have the voice for it. So I don't know that that's an option. I love what I do. I have no desire to retire. As long, I always say, if my brain still works, I'm going to keep doing it. I love teaching EMDR. I love working with people and seeing them heal. I don't have another career choice that really beckons to me.
That's an answer too. I mean, not everybody who gets on here comes up with a different career path. We have had guests before say, you know what, I would still do this work, and here's why. So that's a good answer. Thank you. Carol, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I always perceive myself to be a bit of a hostess for my region. So come to New Orleans, come even to my small town of Covington, come see what we have here. It's unique. It's wonderful. Come visit.
This has been the Let's Talk EMDR podcast with our guest, Carol Miles. Visit www.emdria.org for more information about EMDR therapy, or to use our Find an EMDR Therapist directory with more than 16,000 therapists available. Like what you hear? Make sure you subscribe to this free podcast wherever you listen. Thanks for being here today.